Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, y'all, I'm Joe Tower, and you're listening to Tales of Our Folly, a storytelling podcast. Each episode, we will bring you one new story recorded live at one of our past shows in Los Angeles. Every month, we'll also bring you one bonus episode, a one-on-one interview with a local storytelling all-star to discuss story, folly, and how they both play a role in all of our lives. Each of our live shows is a lineup of four storytellers sharing one true personal story in front of a live audience about the shame and embarrassment of being a human. I'm the host and creator, and if you're ever in the LA area, check out our Facebook page or our website at www.talesofourfolly.com for updates on upcoming event dates and times. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pippa, Spotify, or wherever you download your damn podcasts. If you've got a story you'd like to tell in spoken or written form, email us at talesofourfolly@gmail.com. All right, enough chit chat. On with the folly. So since we're Tales of Our Folly now, it's going to give us the opportunity to throw down on some more diverse content for our new one-on-ones, which up to this point have been with mostly females. But recently I got the chance to sit down with actor and filmmaker and male Chadwick Hobson, a force in independent cinema and one of the brains behind up-and-coming production Voltron, The Night's Young. He's also a dear friend and a great dude. Chadwick and I grabbed a Bloody Mary at Spare Tire in Mid-City to chat about what it's like letting go of the myths of success in the entertainment industry and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and getting down to the business of making art on your own. Here's a Tales of Our Folly one-on-one with Chadwick Hobson.
Brunch is going on until 3.
Sweet.
Perfect. Got bottomless mimosas that are 18.
Awesome.
Single mimosas for 6, Bloody Marys for 6, Micheladas for 6.
I'm definitely going to do a Bloody Mary.
What are we recording, gentlemen?
And a water. We're recording an interview with this gentleman here. Gosh. He's a producer and a writer. And,
rock on.
Yeah. So we're getting a lowdown on him.
Get it in.
Yeah, that's right.
What did you want to drink?
I'll have a Bloody Mary and a water.
Let's do the Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you so much, man.
Hey.
Cheers.
To you, buddy. Congrats.
Thank you.
On the piloto.
Thank you.
So that's nice.
Yeah.
What's the status? Like, what happens from, like, because you guys have become sort of experts on this. Like,
yeah.
What happens between getting financing and making it?
So, dude, it is insane. Is this happened? My college roommate is kind of the one who's helping spearhead this, but he's the one who found it like a while ago. Because I've written a fuck ton of just stuff.
Yeah.
Always.
With
zero, like, kind of like, once again, like a dog chasing cars. Like zero. Fucking,
well, you're definitely a dude that, like, and I feel like this is why The Night's Young has done so well.
Yeah.
It's like you're a dude that's like, I got an idea.
I'm gonna do it. I've got here are the 5 steps that I'm gonna do to get it done.
Yep.
And I'm gonna have it done by tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very much that. And so it's this always thing, like it's really hard for me to see too far ahead because I get super excited and tunnel visioned on one thing until it's done, and then once that's done, it's on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And it was this weird thing that like he works for Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker. He's just a fan. He's always been kind of talking about development and getting into that world just because of the connections, and he also just loves movies.
Yeah.
And we talk about it all the time.
Development needs more dudes that just love movies.
Love movies. He just loves movies. Yeah. Like, I didn't know he was doing this, by the way. Like, I had no idea that he was like, send me stuff. Like, I just want to read it.
Like, shopping.
Yeah. And he was like doing it, but he's like reading this, like, oh, this is cool. But so when we were back in New York, I had like this award ceremony for my college, and he came back to just be a fucking friend, you know? And he was there with their buddy, mind you, not knowing he was doing this, but he was like packaging ideas. Like, he was like, I think this pilot would be great with this director that you worked with in The Last Descent. You guys work together really well.
And you guys have a good rapport.
Yeah,
you have a good relationship. Yeah.
And he has like, this is kind of like right in his wheelhouse because he got to know him too. And so he was like talking to investors, and he created his own company. He's like, hey, I think I can do this. And then one day he called me, he's like, hey man, Soul, the pilot that you wrote. I was like, oh yeah, I love that thing. And he's like, yeah, I think I got it, man. I was like, what? He's like, how much do you need for that? And I kind of like went and just did a ballpark estimate of like, but like my kind of budget is different than a normal like line budget. I go on Microsoft Word and I'm like, all right, gas. And $250, like, you know, like that.
Yeah.
But it always works. Like, we get the job done.
Yeah.
And I did that in the ballpark with that. And he was like, yeah, I can get you that. Really? And then I talked to the producer that Isaac works with. I work, Aaron Stevenson. He's amazing. But he produced The Last Descent, too. He's that. And he was, like, on board, too. And he was like, I sent him, like, can we get this done for this? And he's like, yeah, it'd be tight. But, yeah, we can. And I was like, I think I can do this. And so, over the course of time, like, Chris was just packaging this, and he got it, and it got to the point, which was this moment where I didn't know what to do, like I didn't know how to react, because he was like, I thought, okay, so if this is happening, okay, so what we're gonna need to do is like, and I was going into contracts and talking to equity, he's like, hey man, stop, you don't need to do that. I have that taken care of. Like, all you have to worry about is creative. And it was this.
That's a little bit of a milestone.
That was
huge. You guys have been like doing all of your own shit.
All of it. Like everything from top to bottom when it comes to producing, like we've been doing that. And it's always, you know, Brian, myself, Jeff Larson, who's the newest guy member, and Alex Raines, and we'd always be doing everything top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, from the ground level, from casting to like trying to like do coverage to create our breakdowns to our scripts to the crafty, like all of it. And now it's this weird point where we're like, we don't necessarily have to do that anymore for these projects. Yet we learned something though, is that like last year we kind of had that, we were kind of on an upswing here, and we stopped making as much. Like, the normal thing of, like, hey, I'm bored, what do you want to do? Make a movie? Cool, let's do that.
Yeah.
Like, we stopped doing that because it was this whole, now we're at this level and we can't go below it. Like, we no longer can be the guys with a camera in your living room having a beer while making a short film that we probably won't release, but it's just fun. And we had this whole powwow, like, fuck that. Like, that's why we're here. Like, this is exactly...
Because we always follow the impulse.
Always follow the impulse. And it's like constantly just reminding yourself to make shit. Always. It was that. And so we got back to doing that, too. So on, like, while we're doing this whole fucking, you know, this huge pilot and all that, which is amazing, we're also, like, doing another feature, kind of like how we met, which is like, you know what, let's scrounge up some money and go back to our hometown and make another feature. Why? Because we can. We know how to do it, and we're just getting better.
How strong of a creator and producer is it going to make you that you already know how to do all this shit?
Mm.
And you know what to watch out for, and you know how much it takes to make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can call people on their shit when it's like, you have a way of like protecting yourself now that a lot of filmmakers like just don't have.
And it's this thing, like it's the myth that we're trying to do. It's so funny. We just did a workshop, like an indie film workshop.
Yeah.
And we were talking about what we wanted to do with it, like what we wanted to show. And it's talking to Brian and Jeff, and you're just like, I feel like I've been to a few of these workshops, and they're just commercials for the people.
For the business.
Like,
yeah.
they're just like, hey, this is me. I made some stuff. Look how awesome I am.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, that benefits
nobody. Yeah.
Like, oh, cool. So you're a filmmaker that's made some things for very little. Like,
thank you for showing them to us.
That's amazing in 2009. Like,
totally.
You're not anything special anymore. It's how you kind of like.
Because everybody has a film studio.
Everybody has a studio in their pocket. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You can do anything. It's about doing it. But like, the one thing we did is we showed Brian and I's first short film that we ever made in Flagstaff. It's called Ascending. And we said nothing. We just like, all right, played like the very end of that film. And we got like a bar location for it, shot it on a Canon. I think my T3i. I think we shot on that. And we did that. And then played it, and then like lights went off, and then like lights went back on, and like there was like occasional clap, and then Brian was like, "So listen, that was dog shit." Like it was
nothing better than like reading or looking at your first shit and being like, "I've come a long way."
That. Like this was so bad. But here's the thing: it's like we love it because it was our thing that we're like, "Oh no, this is real shit." It's but we love doing it.
Was it like the thing that... So, was the impulse for you guys to always want to be filmmakers? Or did that come along?
Dude, I don't even know when there's a progression of like, you know, we're going to create this company and do this. It was like, hey, I want to tell this story.
Yeah.
You're my buddy. Let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the base level. And it just kept on growing from doing that.
Yeah.
And then it was so funny. The more that we did that, the more people started to come and like want to be a part of it and help out. It's the field of dreams thing, man.
Right.
You build it, they will come. Because it really was. I mean, it was originally like this to showcase us as actors for what we wanted.
Yeah.
You know, like that was the goal. And then it evolved to something of like, I started to care less and less about acting, which is a weird thing.
Did you see that happening?
Yeah, I did. I saw it happening, but I saw it in auditions.
Yeah.
Like I started getting this in like all, like more auditions and more work, and I started going like, I don't really care anymore about these auditions because I have all this.
Which, let's face it, as a failed actor, Hollywood actor myself, let's call it how it is and say that, unfortunately, in this particular town, in this particular industry, actors don't have a lot of agency. Actors don't have a lot of, like, it's hard to, I always say this about, like, writing, that at least with writing, you can always feel productive.
Yes.
Because you can always be doing the thing, but with acting, like, what are you gonna like sit around your apartment and read sides?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly. And it's this weird thing that like I figured out I'm a bit, as we tell you, Brian and Jeff a little bit about it, but I'm a bit of a control freak when it comes to my, I mean, you were there for my last table read where like, if my vision, I am so stuck until I'm convinced otherwise, but like super protective of that. But the reason being is like now, this is all I care about.
Right.
Like I don't, and to go on another end, like objectively talking about acting, going in the original, you're gonna find this interesting. But I looked at it, I went and I saw The Danish Girl, Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah. Where he's either,
yeah, he's a man.
He's not trans.
You know, he's the first person to have the surgery to change sex.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I watched that and it was like, the trailer was amazing, but I sat there in the theater and I was like by myself. And I was like, and I think I just did a film in Oregon or something and I was like, I'm on the up and up. And I watched that and I went, it was this humbling moment of, holy fuck, I cannot do that. Even if that was given to me, I don't have that ability.
I love that you say that because, and I hate it when I say that to people and they think I'm being self-deprecating.
Yeah, it's not that.
No, and I appreciate, I think like, I mean, because I went to grad school for theater and like tried for a little bit, but I look at some guys and I'm like, I'm serviceable on camera in a particular capacity.
Yes.
And I can say that if
what your film or show requires within that capacity.
Yeah.
I'll show up, mm-hmm. I'll know my lines,
yep.
and I'll deliver.
And you'll deliver.
But there are guys out there where I'm like, oh, I'm not that.
Yeah.
I'm not good like that.
I can't do that is absurd what you
the
can
idea
do.
That I would vanish into a role, not a thing.
Nope. Yeah, and it's weird.
You would still see me. Everybody would be like,
everyone
oh, it's Joe Tower.
Yeah. It was, in The Last Descent, I did this thing that they screen in my hometown at Harkins, which is a rad thing, and like they flew me out to go and like do that, which was really cool.
So cool.
But I'm sitting there and I'm like, I didn't see The Last Descent till like 4 months after it was released.
Do you have a problem watching yourself at all?
Only in drama.
Oh, because it's weird.
Yeah, comedic, like comedy is easy to watch because I'm like learning.
Isn't it weird that there's no self-consciousness in comedy?
Yeah.
There's self-consciousness in comedy when you're performing it, but none when you're looking back.
None.
On it.
Yeah.
But when you do drama, I feel like you look back on it and you're like, oh, that's.
Oh, why did I do that? That was a weird thing.
Did you guys believe that? Which was a weird thing because, like, there's like this really hard to watch. Crawling scene into the cave, which is really claustrophobic.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
But it's so funny that like
I have the DVD.
You do.
I have it. It's in my collection. So.
All right. Well, I walked into the theater.
I have to have DVDs of films and TV shows that all my friends are in. Are you kidding?
Come on. I'm glad that you still hold on to those things and it's not just like in a fucking cloud.
No.
Because I love that.
No.
Very much a hard copy person myself.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
100%. But we're walking into the theater, and I just like, because I just wanted to like listen. Like this is, I've been waiting for this moment in my life. Of like, I have a movie that's opening in
being
my
in a theater,
and like, I walked in, made sure like no one on the side where they can't see you. And during the crawling, you start hearing, and I heard like four people like, Chad, you idiot! Like you know, like they still see me. Like,
they see Chad.
Of course, Chad would do this.
Yeah.
Like this freaking moron. One person I could have been my mom was like Chadwick.
Mom,
shut up!
It's my movie.
Come on!
I think that I think it's
but it's
so...
the vanishing into it is one thing that like you see once in the Danish Girl, and I looked at like Eddie Redmayne's a tall, lanky white dude, and I don't. When I looked at this, I looked at like I don't look at being good in my acting class or being good in my circle. Like I'm not competing with them. I'm competing with like I want to make this an actual reality that this is gonna be my life. And I'm gonna be able to financially support myself for this. I have to compete with people like that for those roles if I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and I went, I'm not close to that. I cannot perform that.
I did the same thing.
So what do I have to do with what I have to make it?
Yeah.
And I went, I was like, all right, one thing I can do is I can continually make more shit than anyone else out there.
Yeah.
And we'll figure out and see what that does. And over the course of time, I started getting better and better at just making shit and then making it a little better and a little better.
Yeah.
And then working with individuals that I like, oh, I'm not really good at this. Brian's good at this. Jeff is good at this. Oscar is good at this. Isaac is good at this. And the more I do that, the more like my friends Hope and Yana like are stupid writers. They're so amazing. And like so there's moments where like in like scripts where I'd be like, I'm lost with this female character. I don't know what I'm doing. I can plug someone else in, and before you know it, I have this product that I've created that I like is an amalgamation of all my talented friends with my vision. And all of a sudden, I have this thing. I'm like, you know what? Eddie Redmayne couldn't fucking write this.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's how I do it. And like, here's my way in. Is that way? Is like I can objectively write, produce, create, and direct, and star in something that's super me.
Right.
And that's my way.
And the evolution of I think being an artist is like recognizing your limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you get better at the things that you're good at.
Yes, exactly.
But if you don't, if you think that you're like, oh, I can do anything, you sort of like never, there's never enough energy that goes into the things that you're really suited for.
Never.
I think it's one of the reasons that I, like, Tales of Male Folly became so, like, crystallized for me is because, like, with acting, because I knew my limitations as an actor.
Yeah.
And it was a place where I could still sit in front of a microphone and there was no pretense.
Yeah.
Like I could just be myself.
Mm.
And guys could come up and just be themselves and tell their story however they tell it. Like I don't care. Like I don't want any artifice.
Mm.
And I was talking to a buddy of mine the other night and he was talking about videotaping the shows.
And, you know, we've talked about it because you guys videotaped that show in January.
The footage was amazing. We got an unbelievable...
James Acaster. It's a Netflix special.
Oh, my God, man.
That guy was
unbelievable sizzle reel out of it.
Yeah,
very exciting. But I told him, like, I don't want to make that a regular thing because I don't want to have a lineup of dudes or ladies that are, like, performing for the camera.
Yeah.
It's not what it's about.
No.
The podcast, the recording is... just as far as I'm willing to go.
And that's, to be honest, it's so, I don't know, like, I recently had took a cross-country road trip to Memphis.
Yeah.
And we listened to all of them.
Did you really?
Yeah. Every single one. On the, because they're like, we have 21 hours to kill.
It's quick. They're quick.
And they're super, they're so quick that you can, like, hear a fun story. But, I mean, it's super, once again, you found something that I feel like is so super specific, which is what you need. Because, like, just like when you're talking about, like, there's certain things you can show up in. I learned this in college from my professor, my college advisor, but it was like she's talking about, because I have a degree in business and accounting.
I think I knew that.
Because of course.
Because you have to.
Yeah.
It's a backup.
With like a sports marketing slash political science specialization and a theater minor. Like what was I?
Yep.
I was just like, I have 4 years of like almost free school.
Just get all of
so
it.
So I'm going to squeeze the living fuck out of it.
Yeah.
So I got all of it. She said the one thing that always stuck to me, and she's like, you have to look at your business and you have to see if you're providing something that no one else is. Because if you can find something where you as a product are so specific and specialized. Jesus.
I like specialized.
I've had two sips of a Bloody Mary.
Literally,
and I'm done.
Specialized.
But like that, then you'll never have to worry about not working again.
Yeah.
And so the more, once again, you look at it, like I'm gonna look at myself not as an actor, but as a product.
Yeah.
Objectively, what do I have? Like, what is this? And how do I make this the most marketable and efficient that I can?
Yeah.
And that's when like the writing came in, that and the characters. And like I can play this character, but if you give me like a zany, fun character, I'm awful. Like even my acting coach, I went in was like, you have a problem, like you kind of think you're the smartest person in the world. And I was like, no. And he's like, well, you do. Because like if you have any writing that's like you don't like, you can't act like you don't like it. Like I can see that you hate what you're saying.
Like when your readings and when
And he's like, it's no wonder you don't book anything on NCIS, because like you look like you fucking hate every moment of everything you're doing.
Chad McCompton.
yeah.
For NCIS.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the notes, he was like, good, but this time, like, you don't hate everything that's happening around you. I was like, it's that obvious.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by that?
I'm very positive. You know? I can reflect positively about it.
Well, I actually comes therapy. That's
I mean, 100%. Story. Yeah. That's And so you still are pursuing acting.
Yeah, 100%. But, like, it's a beautiful thing that I'm doing is... And I talk with my manager about it, too, and she's the coolest.
Uh-huh.
And because, you know, a lot of people look at money, and I've gotten a lot of auditions where it's like a lead for something or a feature or this, which normally is great, and I'll read it, and I'll be like, I don't fucking care about this character at all, so I'm going to pass. And, like, my agents have been really about it, like cool about that, too.
Do you pass frequently on stuff?
Yes.
What attracts you to, like, what attracts you or...
To be honest...
Or repels you?
Like, the more unbelievably flawed character that I can find. I need to find... We talk about this a lot, because, like, the one note that I refuse to take when my writing from anyone is, like, your characters aren't likable enough. I do nothing with that. Because I'm like, yeah, that's the point. Like, I'm writing for people that, like, I tell stories for the individual that goes to movies alone. Like that.
Sure.
Like, because, did you watch the first season of True Detective?
Yeah.
Loved it. But, like, Rust, Matthew McConaughey's character, is the most cynical, unlikable character in the world. And his last line is, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it.
It's long,
it's so long
enough ago where you all should have, like, watched it already.
Yeah. But, like, his last line is, like, the man who sees no value to any part of the world, he looks up and, you know, he's like, well, Woody Harrelson's character, who's now his friend, says, you know, like, he's like, yep, yeah, it's the same old story, like, the battle between good and evil, light versus dark. And looks up at the sky, and he's like, well, if you look at me, you know,
Dark's occupying a lot more territory. And then Russ Cole, the most cynical human in the world, says, well, at first there was only Dark, so if you ask me, the light's winning. Which, it's so much more enjoyable to listen to a human who has zero fucking care about the world and flawed with all of the problems you could possibly imagine and be able to find a sliver of light.
Like a shred of positivity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, but an earned one where they like go through some shit.
Yeah.
And that's where like those are the characters that I want to play. Like I can write and direct and produce other stuff for my friends that like that, but like if I'm gonna act in something, that's the only character right now that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And like and that would make me feel creatively fulfilled. Because I did, not to name it, but I did a project where like I love acting, but I showed up and I was like, I don't think I love it as everyone else does, because like I hate going to work. Like this character is like, I don't fucking care about their problems. Like I don't care about anything that I'm saying.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, there's something to that. Where, like, if you love acting, you just want to be an actor in anything. And you just want to perform. I get that. I'm not that. And that was something I learned. I don't have that.
More of a filmmaker.
Yes.
Yeah. Does Nights Young have... Do you guys have particular stories that you feel either you guys gravitate towards? Or you feel that as a production team, you guys are best suited for?
Yeah, well, I think that the coolest thing about it is, like, Brian, Jeff, and myself, and, like, including, like, Alex, who's...
You guys think you have the same sensibilities? Or no?
No.
Yeah.
And I think that is a huge strength of ours, is we're really able to wipe away, like, anything personal. Like, we argue about scripts all the time, but it's not even, like, an argument. It's a fun discussion of life, because, like, you see life this way. I see it differently. Let's talk about this every single time we find something better.
Yeah.
Every time. And it's just, it's the most fun. But like, literally all of us love different movies differently. Like all of us have completely different opinions. Brian's writing and my writing and Jeff's writing.
Totally different.
Are so vastly different.
Yeah.
It is. But it's so great. Like it's a signature. And everyone's like, oh, you did this again, or you did this. Okay, cool. Maybe this. I know you like doing this. It's this. But like, the projects that we have now, like, I'm really excited about a lot of stuff we're doing. Like, we're writing and directing a, like, VR miniseries.
Really?
Yeah, in August.
Awesome.
With this new company that we met. And that happened yesterday, we got that job. But we have the pilot that's going on, and then,
So when you take jobs like that, when you guys take jobs like that, is that sort of, like... Is that the business end of it, where you're like, we can find, even if it's a, if the content of the project is not necessarily in line where you with your interest, is there a way where you guys go like, here's where we can bring, like, Nights Young sensibilities to this project?
Kind of, but we never actually had to confront that.
Oh.
As in, all of these projects that we've gotten
are sort of right up your alley.
They came to us.
Right.
And here's the shit about, like, making your own content for the sake of fucking nothing, is, like, this person came to us for this project because he saw all of our stuff already and was like, I want this.
Oh, cool.
You know, so it's so much better when they're like, no, you just do your thing.
Do what you guys do.
Do what you guys do.
Yeah.
Because we need this.
What do you think that is? That you guys do?
Oh man, it's so different.
It's such a weird question.
No, it's because it depends on what it is. Like, to be honest, like, Jeff has this show called Adopted that's coming out, like, but like, he independently financed, and he just made it, just came out. We don't know what we're gonna do with it yet, but like, it's so different than anything that Brian and I have ever done.
Yeah.
You know, individually or together. And if someone watches that, they can potentially come to the Nights Young, like, listen, I'm trying to write a television show that's marketed between, you know, like, 12 years old and 17 years old, or even younger than that. And then we'd be like, Jeff literally was the showrunner of this thing. And that's when you can pivot and like, oh, no problem. Jeff, you're up.
Yeah.
Like, you know? And this whole thing that we now move into the supporting role behind that.
Yeah.
The same thing, like, the pilot, the Soul pilot. Like, they're like, Chad, this is entirely your vision. You're doing this. And Jeff and Brian are now sliding into the supportive roles there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so now I'm taking the lead here. And Brian has, like, Alex and Jamie was Brian's directed film.
Yeah.
We both wrote that. But I was like, this is, like, he played that one really close to the chest. And I was like, this is your vision. Now we slide in the supporting role for that.
Yeah.
Which is a different movie than I would have directed.
Yeah.
Which is great, because his version is much better. Mine's like
Mine would be like read between, like the same dialogue, but the actors would be doing, like speaking in iambic pentameter. Which, like it's not same. Thank God he did that. But it was. It's depending on what the project is. It's really nice because we all know each other and all of our strengths in that. That it's like, oh, what is this? You're up. This yeah. one's the lead. Go, yeah. take this. Yeah. And which is huge. We learned that too, making yeah. stuff, like little things. Another thing is you do the dynamic is we just made a bunch of little stuff together. But during that, you go through the growing pains of like, okay, maybe all three of us shouldn't have Final Cut. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
One person should. And we yeah. all recognize that yeah. and go through it.
But interesting.
Like now we have that paradigm down where it's like, I don't know if you saw those little UPS commercials that we made.
Yeah, totally.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
But now like even like there's learning in that because like I wrote that 7-1 3 years ago and I was like, and you know what? I'm at a time where I want to watch, I just want to see that. Like not for any reason, but then we had a commercial agency hit us up to potentially do it, like submit a commercial bid for this other thing that's potentially in the works, but just because we made a thing for free. So like another lesson again, and make a thing.
Followed your impulse.
Yes.
And followed just impulse, kept making the shit.
Did it. And then that led though, like we made that, and then Brian like was like, you know what? We should do let's we have like we're gonna have Woman, who's like, you know, on the up and up. Like yeah, those girls are killing it.
Big time.
But they're like, all the girls are gonna be over to shoot the end of that. Like let's shoot like three more endings and then plug in the rest later. And it's like, I mean, we could. Like, let's just do a good job on... Well, actually, no, you're right. Let's do that. And so he shot the ending of the Notebook one and then the ending of the Pulp Fiction one. And he was just like, we didn't have the rest of that shot yet. We just shot the endings, hoping, like, maybe this will work. And it did. We shot the beginning of the Notebook one, and that was hilarious. But it's just like... I don't know. Once again, Brian was... And Jeff also is really... The dynamic of making stuff. This was really fun to see because it's... I noticed that Brian and I will... An ID will pop up. I'm like, all right, when are we shooting? 7:30? Like,
you know, sounds great.
Like, all right, I'll be over there. You have a camera?
Yeah.
The memory card.
Yeah.
But like, Jeff came in and it's huge because he's the kind of guy that, like he came in. He's like, cool, love the ambition, cool. Do you guys have a boom? You know, well, do we use your phones? You put your phone, tape your phone to your chest, and then we'll use that, and then go. And he's like, or let's take a breath. We'll shoot tomorrow night. And we'll get a sound guy for this minimal amount, and then your product will look that much better.
Yeah.
Oh, we could do... All right, yeah, you got
fine. Fine.
Cool.
But it's still, the rule still stands exactly. that you guys just make shit.
Yeah, and we just make shit constantly, all the time.
Well, I think the issue becomes, like, if you're waiting, it's like waiting around for your audience.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Be your own audience.
Be your own audience. Make shit that you love. That's the yeah. only answer.
Well,
you
know? Who made the guys that made the puffy chair?
Oh, the Duplass brothers.
Duplass.
We love them.
Unbelievable interview. And I can't remember where I heard it.
I guarantee you. I think it was
maybe a Grantland interview.
Okay.
And they had this amazing quote. I think Jay had this amazing quote where he was like, we were trying to make stuff. Yeah. We were trying to like, get our stuff out there, and we realized that the cavalry isn't coming.
Yep,
that's such a great
Mark Duplass, South by Southwest, like keynote speech.
Yeah,
it's the cavalry's, and I just finished their book. They just had a book release called Like Brothers that Brian got me a signed copy. Dope.
Choice gift.
And by the way, like when I go home, I went home for my niece's birthday, and I love the train. I ride on the train. I get like a sleeper car.
Do you take the train?
Yeah, overnight.
To Arizona?
It's an overnight train, so you get there like Union Station at 6, and you take that. And
I might do that to go visit my folks.
It is phenomenal.
All right.
My favorite thing. It's a fascinating ride, and it's this great thing where I get to shut out and just work, like no Wi-Fi.
Oh yeah,
and I
totally.
Just write and work and read, and interesting people are there, and it's just amazing. But like. It's 11:30.
The train is romantic.
It is. It's so romantic. Yeah. And I was reading in the the cafe cart at 11:30 with my Duplass Brothers book and like a mint tea, and I'm just like drinking. This is amazing. And then I posted a picture of it on Twitter, and I'm just learning how Twitter works.
It's about time.
Yeah, I know. Like, Instagram's the only one that I like. I really enjoy this because I just love everyone's photo albums.
Well, Twitter's garbage. So there's such a bunch of like trash people on Twitter.
It's ridiculous.
I took a bunch of time off from Twitter, and then I'm back on again. Mm-hmm. We're friends on Twitter, as you know. And
buddy,
it is trash.
Love all your shit.
There are trash people on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Just being crude and rude and cruel.
Yeah.
And I think like that's where the trolls are. I feel like there's not a great deal of trolling on Instagram.
No, not really.
No.
At least none that I've come across yet.
Yeah. Just wait.
But no, I posted a picture on Twitter, and now I'm Twitter. Like I love Twitter because that picture was immediately liked by Mark Duplass, and I was like.
This I have.
You know, and you do that thing of where like that happened. And I looked at my phone and was like, "It's real. We're gonna be best friends."
I'm here now.
And I turned into Kathy Bates from Misery, on a train in my head. But you know, like, oh my God, he's gonna invite me to his house, and I'm gonna babysit his children, and then we're gonna hold each other and make movies. What are you talking about?
Chat.
Snap out of it. You know?
Oh my God.
But it's that paradigm that we kind of followed is we're always just gonna make shit that's shit.
I think it's the rule that a lot more people in LA have to learn. Mm-hmm. Not have to learn, and what I appreciate about you guys, thank you. What I appreciate about you guys is that, I am not trying to like rag on digital media.
Yeah, yeah.
Not digital media as a medium, obviously, because it's great. But digital media as a culture, we need people that are actually making things.
Yeah.
And I don't know that like. Shooting a Snapchat of yourself at the gym is not a thing.
Dude, I'm so glad you're talking.
That's not content.
No, it's not content. This is where you're risking nothing. So I have to...
Also, we have that, like, there... And, you know, I encountered this with Tales of Malfali, too. There has to be... You have to be saying something.
Something. There, you have to say something. Like, you can smell... The reason why we know it, like, we've made a couple things like that where we were like... We made something to be liked by people, not because we liked it. And it felt so awful to do.
Yeah.
And we have to quote our good friend, and Billy Small, the wonderful...
A genius. A true genius.
A literal genius. Like, my zombie movie, which, guys, it's my Medi and like, I...
It's incredible. Incredible. Don't even worry about it.
I will make
Just
that
stay
movie.
Tuned.
Stay tuned. That movie's getting made.
Yes, it's rad, and you will all be better people when you watch it.
He was, I mean, Billy's a story by, he was there from the inception along with Brian, and he's been so helpful, but I've learned so much about, like, the world and life from that guy.
Yeah.
You know, but the one thing...
He's wise. He has a wisdom
about him. He's so wise.
Yeah.
But he said something where I was like, yes, because, like, I watched Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah.
It was like a year ago. I watched Breakfast at Tiffany's and I was kind of like in an old movie on Golden Pond, and I was like watching all these classics, and I went, man, I hate society so much, because anything you watch right now, like when you say like Hollywood is a mirror of society, and like the thing you make, and any time any character says Instagram, Twitter, swipe, match, all this, the idea of love to me, or like that kind of the beauty and magic behind film, is dead immediately. I don't care anymore. Like, I feel like Audrey Hepburn is turning in her grave listening to this bullshit. Like, this, I love the English language, and to hear love talked about with matching and swiping, not to judge anyone who meets their significant other that way. I know plenty of friends that have.
Totally, yeah.
But like, I personally don't want to watch, like, the conflict that happens between, you know how we met, I swiped right, we matched, and then we had an argument, and then we got back together. Like, I don't fucking, there's nothing magical about that. Like, individually in your life, sure, but like, I don't want to watch that.
There's also like no real, there's not like the electricity of content.
No, there's not. And it's like, you have to be so creative to make two people talk, like talking, interesting and new, especially like, I loved Call Me By Your Name.
I loved it.
Like, it's not exactly my cup of tea, but then I got to the very end, and it was, like, you have to earn this of, like, you have to find ways to talk, like, about love and relationships that no one has ever said before.
Yeah.
And that final speech by Michael Stolbar to his son is a speech about father to son. And like, that's a narrative that's been told 100 times, but I've never heard it like that.
That is.
And that's the goal.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, like, you have to have this romantic kind of like love of the magic of dialogue of the English language and film and of rhetoric between two people talking to each other. And like, you disagree with me, watch a movie. Like, I loved Sleeping with Other People. I thought it was a fun movie. Like, it's Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie.
Oh yeah.
It's a fun movie. Yeah. You did this and it was like, oh, this is fun. I laughed a ton and cool. And then you watch Breakfast at Tiffany's and you're like, there's so much magic to this film. Like, her walking up to a Tiffany's in the morning on an empty New York street with Moon River playing.
Yeah.
And like the gloves and like, oh, yeah. This is all I'm interested in trying to make is like these, like an attempt to make Dead Poets Society or something like that. So getting back to what Billy Small said is he's like, I'm so tired, and he coined this, I'm so tired of the when Bae gets home from a workout comedy.
That is priceless.
Yeah. Isn't that right? Because like, he said it and you're like, oh my, you encompassed all everything of the comedy with that. The I'm not interested in the when Bae gets home from a workout comedy.
Well, it's,
yeah.
And that's what we decide, like, we're never gonna do that. We're never gonna talk about technology in any of our shit. None of it.
You told a brave story at the Tales of Mount Folly show about mom.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Go on, mom. She'll definitely listen to this.
Will she?
Oh my god, yeah. She's the funniest. I mean, this is, I'm sure many people are going to relate to this, but she understands. She's a physical therapist.
Yeah.
She understands so little about this business.
Amazing.
At all, that anytime that we talk, which is way more often than I'd like to admit, but she just goes like, oh, like, everything good? Like, yeah. And then she just go, cool. I don't know. Just, are you happy? Yeah. Oh, yay. But yeah, that old story.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that story, that particular story,
yeah,
is about your mom, mm-hmm, and her influence on your dating life.
Yep.
How is your dating life?
You know, it's I'm seeing a therapist.
So I'm in therapy.
Best. So I'm in therapy is the best way to answer that question. How's married life? You guys
nice,
have a
nice change of the subject.
You guys talking about kids yet?
What about you? Are you married? Are you married type?
I don't know. I like to think I'm a little behind the curve, one might say.
I don't know about that. You're a young man. You've got plenty of time.
But
do you feel that way? Do you feel behind the curve?
Yes. But like, it was so funny. So my dad, this is gonna be fucking hilarious. Thank you so much. This conversation with my dad. My mom had it with my dad and then he had it with me. But it was my mom was like, I heard the conversation in the kitchen. She thought I was like, wasn't downstairs and I was visiting home. And this is like, it's like a year and a half ago. But he was like, you need to talk to your son, okay? Because, you know, I feel like he just needs a father figure to figure out this whole, you know, get me a grandchild thing. Like, you know, I was saying that.
She's ready.
Yeah. And my dad and I have a very lovely rapport, but talking about my dating life is definitely not a part of it.
Who's less into it, you or him?
Ooh, that's a
tough one?
That's a tough one to answer.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd say it's a pretty straight draw on that. But this was the most valiant thing ever. He came over, and I was sitting on the couch, pretending like I didn't hear what just happened. And he's like, hey, so clearly he's never done this before. And he's like, hey, I was like, you haven't brought home a girl, so date anyone? And I'm just enjoying this so much. I was like,
just let
no,
it, let it happen.
Know?
Let him get
I'm not, you know, really worried about it. And then he said he like gave it his all, which he never did before. It was amazing. He was just like, so I'm gonna tell you a story about like, you know, so I was like dating, you know, and I met these girls and he told a couple horror stories about dating girls back in his day. And then he's like, and you're gonna meet someone like you know, like When I Met Your Mother, that changed the game. And all the rules that I had in my head completely changed, and I changed, and I wanted to. That's the biggest difference, is I wanted to change this person. It was like, we're getting really sentimental, and I was like, oh my God, this is, we're having a moment, you know? And
we are in a moment.
We are in a moment right now. And he did this, and then he turned, and he's like, yeah, you're gonna meet that girl, so don't worry about that. And he was quiet, and then he's like, but because you haven't dated anyone at all throughout your entire life, you're gonna have no idea what you're doing, and you're just gonna fuck it up. Like, and it's just gonna hurt really bad, but just know that that's coming. And that's how we ended it. And you hear my mom in the other room go, Randy!
Good talk, Dad.
I know. Good talk, good talk, good talk.
Oh, God.
Good talk. But, no, it was interesting. I just made a huge discovery.
What is it?
My entire life, I kind of realized I never wanted kids.
Oh, yeah.
I never did. And I always thought...
Wait, how old are you?
30.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I never. But then, as of... a few months ago, I figured out that I do, which is
really?
A huge thing.
Really?
It was like analyzing shit, which by the way, this was all just wonderful writing material. Like I just wrote all this down. It kind of helped figure it out. But like writing why I didn't want kids, and then it was all like, I found out the source of that, and then it changed everything. And it was like, I just really don't want a son. I just want a daughter.
Really?
But I mean, we worked through that too, but like I do want kids eventually, which was this huge kind of like my entire life. I was like, I'm gonna be the guy from You, Me, and Dupree because it's the easiest life you could do.
Right.
And now I don't want that.
First of all, I mean, talking from the perspective of a person that's a little older, I don't think you're behind the curve at all. I feel like your 30s are the decade when you can really start to appreciate what other people have to offer emotionally, and you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. This is not to say that people shouldn't meet and get married and have kids in their 20s.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. Do it whenever it feels right.
Whenever feels right.
But I do think that your 30s are a good time to meet the person, to wait around for the person. It's, and also, like, my biggest piece of advice is always, like, don't wait, find the person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do not, I feel like people get to a certain age and they're like, well, I'm alone, or I'm single, and I'm this age, and this is freaking me out, so I'm gonna, like, they sort of, like, take the first person that comes along.
Yeah.
Not the right thing to do.
Which is like, it's so funny when you talk about my approach to like, you know what, maybe I should start thinking like, I do want a relationship. That sounds kind of nice eventually. And instead of just being a human being, I was like, all right, if I do want to do that, I should probably do some research. So I straight up started Googling statistics about like, not being a statistic, like making it natural and that. So I was like, proximity and a statistic of like, proximity has something to do with it. And I looked at like the marriage rate is 76% of the individuals, and they use like the focus group of military dads, and how like a majority of the women they meet is just based on travel. And so I was like, okay, so like, it's clearly gonna be LA, but like, I don't wanna be a part of a statistic. I want it to be just like organic. And then I went to the library and I started reading like the five languages of love, and then I started reading this. I'm like, I'm approaching this like it's my motherfucking capstone. What am I doing? I even made like a fucking Excel chart.
I appreciate the passion.
Yeah.
And the ambition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you're so right on par. And also, like, think about the fact that you have hit 30 with your creative and professional ambitions in place.
Yes.
That's a huge milestone.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we're just not ready to meet a person to share our life with until that's kind of settled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And even it still might change a little bit, which is totally fine. But
yeah.
Like, it feels to me like you're right on par.
Time. It's.
But this society puts a lot of pressure.
It puts a lot of pressure on that. And it was this whole fun. Like, I mean, I came to a term. Like, I'm totally fine, and it would be something that I'm interested in. I'm interested because, you know, I'm just terrified of it. But but it was this whole thing forever that it was like, oh, Chad, no, he's never been in like a real relationship, and so he must be so sad. Which then,
and you're like,
I'm fine. But then people are telling you like, but you're not though.
I mean,
because this is what it's supposed to be, and you're not that. And I was going, and so after a while, you know, when 15 people are like, you need to be sad, because you being happy and single is really infuriating me. And like, you know that.
Right.
And so I started like, you know what, man, should I be sad? Should I try and be sad?
If enough people tell you.
Yeah.
But again, like, that's like our society through and through. It's all about telling us how we feel.
Yeah.
What we should have, how we feel. And that's what I do think, like, therapy, especially for dudes, why I feel like it's such an important component of our adult life and life now, because, man, life now is harder to navigate than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And I feel like men in denial of the need to talk it out, to get out whatever's in,
yeah,
is what contributes to a lot of the plagues in the male gender.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I agree. Don't name the name, but I have a friend that literally texted me when you went to the bathroom that he's going through things with his girl and he doesn't know what to do. So right after this, I'm directly going to his place to talk it out.
Oh, God bless.
And we're doing it. Like,
you
that's now
be.
A thing.
You gotta be. That's gotta be the thing. And also, like, you know, it's interesting that you brought this up earlier about the idea of how you can sort of, like, spot a skeezy dude when he doesn't have any best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. I feel like we're at this juncture right now, and times are on fire. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But I think, like, it's also this fixed point where suddenly, especially, like, regarding white men, we are at the precipice of being a part of a great societal improvement.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
One of the things that, like, white dudes have to do in particular, I think, to help is sit down and shut up, mainly.
Mm-hmm. Listen. Oh, my God. Yeah. Listen.
But I think that...
And any guy who says that's not fair, shut up.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Shut up.
And I think that we could head an entirely new and healthy direction starting at this point.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we're obviously reckoning with is years and years and ages of toxic masculine culture.
Yeah.
And as we become new generations and become, you know, parents, or mentors, or elders, or whatever, I do think as men, like, it's our responsibility to, like, encourage the generations that come after it, that feeling and pain and being sad or depressed or worried or scared, all of that stuff is valid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're in the wake of, like, one of the most manliest, one of the dudes that seemed to have the best handle on being a dude, Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the heels of him committing suicide because he was sad, probably.
Yeah.
Because he was depressed.
Yeah.
And he didn't feel like he could talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. And I, you know, suicide's just spiking anyway,
it's
because
it's a fucking massive problem.
But, like, especially with men, because we put the demand on ourselves to be stoic, and we don't want to talk about it, and can't do that anymore.
No.
I don't know if you saw it. I made it 2 years ago, but it was the first short film that I ever directed. Rogue directed.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, especially in this culture, like fucking LA, and I was in the midst of it where I was like,
what was the short about?
It's called Kristen. And it's, I went through this thing where, like, it's based on myself, but I was working 35 hours in a bar and then going home and writing till 3 in the morning, and then running, and then working out, because I was getting, like, CW auditions and shit, and right. I thought, of course, at that point, you relate success to being attractive, uh-huh. which that's a whole different bag of tricks that I learned, thank God. Uh-huh. But, like, I was going through this whole thing, and then anytime I was in a social situation, or on Facebook, it was so many actors and actresses that I would talk to in person would tell me that they have, like, a pilot in development with HBO or CBS or something, and they're testing for this huge thing, and they're about to blow up, and all this is working out. Like, their web series is attached to being in Netflix or whatever. And yep. and then they would all then be on the internet, like, with a picture of their face, like, being a headshot, being, like, a quote, like, if you rise from the ashes, you'll fly like a phoenix. And then this is how you do this. And then it'll be, like, followed by an explanation of, like, if you want to be in this industry, if you work hard and then you just stay positive, you'll make it. And that narrative, in different words, but that narrative, if you just work as hard as you can and stay positive and stay happy and some other inspirational fucking bullshit with them looking pretty in a picture, and, like, that is that. And, like, that, over time, I looked around me at one point and I was like, so everybody has a pilot in development, everyone's gorgeous, and everybody's completely happy, when I'm so unbelievably sad.
Like, tired,
sad. Exhausted, no potential on the horizon. I don't think I'm a good actor at this time. I'm like, I need work. Like,
yeah.
I can't, even if I had a pilot in development, I wouldn't know what to do with it. So, like, I have so much that I need to do and get through. And I was like, I feel like I'm the only person that's sad.
Yeah.
Because of every artifice that I saw that everyone was putting up was this whole thing. Come to only realize, because I was new to LA, that all of it was bullshit. Every part of it was just horseshit. And then, but I was like, I feel like if I, because I thought about something, like if I saw, I was looking for a film, because that's how I connect with the world when I don't understand it, is I find a film that helps me. And just once again, the very base level is makes me feel less alone, which is like kind of like our mission statement at Night's Young.
Yeah.
But I made this whole thing. I wrote this thing about it because I didn't think it should be a straight white actor complaining about how hard the industry is. So I like wrote about this girl who comes home from a shift at waitressing on her birthday to two voicemails. I was thinking also production-wise. Two voicemails. About one from her ex-boyfriend that's like the passive thing, and the other one I actually had my mom record, which was things that she's told me before, but she doesn't know how much it hurts.
Oh, sure.
The conversation of like all your friends. Oh, perfect, yeah.
Thanks, man.
But it was like the narrative of like, she's like, oh, I ran into your friends and they're all doing this. And like, fortunately for me, my friends are amazing, so they're all doing really successful things. But at the time, like, I ran into this, they're doing great. Also, I love you, I wish you could be here. I can't afford to, you know, like, that's what's going on. Like, you hear it, but it's all out of love. And then saying, like, you're gonna be famous in no time. Also, I transferred a little money into your account, like, $30 so you can buy dinner on your birthday, which you're like, it's all out of love.
They don't know it hurts. They just want to, they're trying to fix.
Yes.
They're trying to fix.
It hurts so fucking much. And so I just wanted to like, so I wrote this, her listening to these two voicemails, and then I decorated the walls with like inspirational quotes from Meryl Streep, Alan Rickman, like all these beautiful things. And then her on the floor cowering underneath positivity. And then it just goes back, and it's between switching between subject and objective, her ripping shit off the walls. And then it ends, and like, it was so funny. I was talking to like, Brian was there, because he's just, you know, homie. He's there.
Yeah.
And he's like talking through and like figuring shit out, and all my other, like Alex Smith was there, and just awesome. And going through it, and then it's talking about the ending, like, all right, but then she reaches up and grabs an acting book and still continues to read. And I was like, no. This is a person who is never going to make it. She's past the prime. Nothing about this is going to be happy. It's just, she's failed and she has no future and this is it. But the only reason I was like, and they're like, why I tell this story? I'm like, because if I saw this during that, I would have been 45,000 times more happy and inspired, because I would know that I'm not alone.
Yes.
That someone else is fucking sad.
Yeah.
And that is all I needed.
Yeah.
I don't need someone to be like, yeah, you're sad, but guess what? the rainbow is so close and all this. It's just like, you know what, I'm sad. You know, that sucks. Let's have a beer and talk about it and then be fine.
Yes.
And take the teeth away.
Well, because sometimes it's just like, I don't need a solution. I just need to be heard.
Exactly.
I you just know. Need to say I'm sad. And
exactly.
Let it be. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank
I appreciate
you very much.
It. No. I got it. You just need to, like, have that moment to, like, because it's, like, within its pressure. It's yeah. pressurized.
Yeah, yeah.
And the moment you release it, And that's what we don't do. And this...
Making it real, man. That's everything.
Relentless positivity is a fine sentiment.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit.
Yes.
Because what they tout is to just, like you said, quote-unquote, be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a thing.
Mm-mm.
Like, I am... You know, and I think in my mom's own way, too, she does similar things where she's trying to make me feel better, but it's like, we don't live like that. I'm not a human being that does that. I'm not, like, and my wife does the right thing. Like, if I'm going through a particular period where I'm like, I either feel like I've taken a step back or I feel like things aren't lining up in the way that I want them to, and I start to get, like, depressed. She sort of like knows that she just needs to like maybe even just leave.
Yeah.
Leave the house, like, because otherwise if she sticks around, she's just gonna try to fix.
Yeah, yeah.
Her impulse is to fix because she cares. But it's either like sometimes I just want to like just let me be in bed.
Yeah.
And be sad.
Yeah.
Or just let me talk. Just listen to me for a
yeah.
second.
Yeah. 100%. Which is so funny though, because I used to be like, human beings are funny, man. And I'm recently coming to terms with the fact that, like, which my roommate, Alex Raines and Brian and Jeff and all these people are like, people are different and you have trouble understanding that. Because, like, so often, we recently discovered this in therapy. I'm on my first. I'm almost through 1.5 Bloody Marys. Shit's getting real.
Say it.
But
I think it's brilliant. I think men going to therapy.
Dude,
when I first started going to therapy, I was always like, I have a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
That's what I would tell people.
Yeah.
Because I was ashamed.
Yeah.
Why?
Now I'm. Yeah. It's fucking fine, and it's great. But I honestly, another shout out needs to be given to Billy Small, because he's also an individual when I first started talking to him that demystified therapy to me. Like, it's fine to talk about.
Because he's wise.
Yeah, he's a wise fucking man.
He's a sage. Billy, you're a sage.
You're a sage, Billy. I remember going, like, talking about it, and a lot of friends come up to me, like, the same shit, that, like, they'll come up and, like, I want to start making stuff. And I would give them the answer and the tools and everything that they need to take control of their career.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Sure, thank
Please
you.
Please come see me again.
Anytime.
I'm here every season.
All right, no.
Oh! Thank you so much. You're a working man. But it was, feel that nervous energy? That dude's an actor.
100%.
But,
desire to showcase at
yeah,
all times.
Yeah, that's another Billy Small coin term. That nervous energy. it was this whole thing where, like, they'd come to me, like, I want to do this. And they never would. Like, I would see, like, I'm waiting for you. Like, I'm giving you everything. I'm giving you every fucking possible tool you need to tell the tiniest story.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it gives me anxiety because I like to be able to fix things for my friends when they're complaining, like, you're not happy. I can make you happy.
Right.
Let me help force you to do this. And it was this whole fucking thing where he told me, and it was this, like, once again, the moment I, it was so much anxiety. And he just said, he's like, you do have a problem understanding that people run their lives differently than you do. You don't understand that quite yet, fully. And he's like, it's not the case, is they're telling me this. And it's not hard to do. It's available, it's there, they have the option to do it. Why are they not doing it? And he said this, and he's like, you said you wanted to be in a relationship, right? I was like, yeah. And he's like, imagine your friend who's in a relationship comes up to you and is like, dude, you want to be in one? Do it. Do it now. Go. Do it. Be in one. Go.
It's all available
do it.
To you.
And you're like, it's all available to you. It's there. Just go and do it. And I was like, that's... Oh, fuck.
You bastard. Yeah.
But it's this whole thing of understanding that people work differently and...
But also that you don't have to save anyone.
Yeah.
And
I can just be there for you as a buddy and help you analyze if you want it. And if you need something,
I'm
there.
I want to make a movie. You can be like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Totally.
Totally. And when you're there, I'm here. Like, it's that. And it saved so many friendships of mine. It
did. Interesting.
Because I was able to be like, I can now just be your buddy and I don't have to fix you.
I love it.
Which, I was in a relationship, not a relationship, it was seeing someone. And it was a huge point of contention because it was like this whole, like, you're constantly complaining about your acting career and this shit and all this. I'm like, maybe do something different. And then it just drove this thing because I was, we couldn't have a relaxing conversation because I was thinking, like, don't complain about the same thing over and over again to me because I'm going to do this. I'm going to tell you what the answer is. Into thinking that I have it, you know? And it just led to a disastrous end. But, like, yeah. But it was one that I learned a lot fucking from, you know? Like, I learned that...
Well, and in L.A. it's hard because I do believe that people's intentions are sometimes sort of, like, fucked up a little.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when they come say that, or they... Which is why I think, like... And my wife does this to me, and it's very helpful.
Steve Wynn, what is on right now? It's like, this is the greatest brunch I've ever
Saturday
had.
Saturday brunch with Wynwood. My wife does this, and she's very smart, too. And it comes down to, like, sort of abandoning social norms and just asking people what they need.
Yeah.
So, like, if I come to her with, like, I don't know, like a, like... She's always like, do you really, like, if I come to her with, like, an idea for a script or whatever, she'll always be like, are you looking for criticism or validation?
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh. Because, like, I think she can tell, like, if I give her an idea and the moment that she'll, like, she'll do the thing where she's about to say something like, yeah, but... And I think she can see me, like bristle.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, okay, wait, what are you looking for here? Mm. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm just wanting you to tell me that I'm brilliant. Sorry. And I think with people, I've started to do that a little bit, where if someone comes to me, and in your situation, like, if someone comes to you and is like, oh, I, you know, I'm really frustrated. I want to, like, make a short film or whatever. There is a little bit of, like, being open enough to say, like, are you asking for my advice or for my help?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to know how to do it? Mm-hmm. Or do you want, like,
me to do it?
To do it, or yeah, to hook you up with somebody? Yeah, or, like, yeah, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
And I think that because we're still not at the place where... In interpersonal relationships, we're like fully honest.
Yeah.
We're not fully honest because we don't want to be. Because by and large, everybody wants to be a good person.
Yeah.
And none of us want to be that person that's like, yo, will you hook me up with that person that did this for you?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always like, if you want me to hook you up with this person, just say that.
Just say it.
And
just
then we could escape this whole bullshit conversation where you try to, where, you know, we're talking about, like, what your, like, purpose is as a human.
Yeah.
And we don't really need to have that conversation.
No.
You're just trying to get to the part where I say, oh, yeah, I'll send your shit to this guy.
Yeah. Oh, my, dude, I'm gonna say something. This is a Billy Small commercial in a weird way.
As much as we can advertise and promote the product of Billy Small,
more or less BS is Instagram. He's a photographer. He's a phenomenal person. But he wrote this thing, this little monologue that
he's like, he and I were talking about, I was getting headshots taken and we were riffing about doing a commercial where we were doing an impression of Werner Herzog but dressed as chickens.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
Man, everything that comes out of that guy's
mouth is
genius.
It's genius.
God damn it.
You ready? This is going to blow your mind. Because this is... He sent this to me, and I'm not going to lie. I went to his apartment to have coffee like 2 hours later, and I had it memorized. Because it was... Like, this is literally everything. You ready? I have it. It's burned my brain.
Oh,
it's really short.
Please, yes.
It's really short. It said, I was at the corner of Fairfax and 3rd when I rolled to my windows to avoid it. The hot breath of men incapable of self-deprecation filling the smiles of women who aren't squinting with promises. Conversations read like the last 3 pages of a book report that'd be marked down a full letter grade if it's any less than 10. Orators without a topic or an audience. Waiters interrupting heartfelt stories to remind each other how important it is to tell heartfelt stories. I felt the pulse quicken my hands in the steering wheel as I realized I was one of them. Not listening, just nodding while they reassured themselves at me, waiting, as they do, for something better to come along. What? Right? It's everything. That's society in a tiny little...
It's what we're doing.
It's what we're doing. That's like, are you talking like at me or to me? Do you need me for this conversation? It's a majority of the conversations that a lot of people have out here. And I'm guilty of it too. I've been there. But knowing it is like, ooh.
And per what we were just talking about, yes, there are some times where, like, if I'm talking to a friend or my wife and I'm like, I just need to say this to get it out. Yes, this doesn't have to be a conversation. I don't need feedback. I just need to get this out.
I just need to get it out.
And it's okay as long as we all understand what our roles are.
Exactly. Say it. Like, as long as you're aware, like, self-awareness is super huge.
And that we're all part of it.
I'm part of it. Like, knowing, like, oh yeah, I definitely do that. I've done that before, for sure. But knowing it is everything. Because, like, when you hear it, like, what am I doing this for? What's the motivation behind this?
Yeah.
Ooh. I think it's just so helpful, man. And honestly, tying this all back to art, it's so immense that, like, now everything is just a character study. Like, everything I do is, like, dude, the zombie movie is... It's so funny when I tell someone the zombie movie is, not knowing how unbelievably fucking personal that is.
Yeah.
It's a story of a relationship that, like, is my entire life and the reason why...
Yeah.
Like, I am where I am.
Yeah.
Like, that grocery store scene But it's just, like... You know, that all... I don't know if you know this, but, like, that whole shit about... To anyone listening, it's just like this dude who...
The elements of it are too specific for it not to be real.
I did that. I studied sleep apnea.
Yeah.
The public library, because thinking in my head that would get me a girl back.
Yeah.
Because I'd be smarter than her boyfriend. Yeah. What? But you do that shit. But, like,
You do that shit.
Once again, like, having those conversations and figuring that shit out and what you're doing and why you're doing it is our job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that. And that's why, like, writing now to me, it's so funny we're talking about this, and it's like, now we're talking, like, I have anxiety medication. I have to have that. Like, and, like, I don't try and compare people's anxiety or pain, because there's no way it's a stupid thing to do that.
Well, and people are all about that, too.
Yeah.
We're all in, like, a mad competition. Who's working the hardest?
Who's the most
tired? Like,
yeah, totally.
I'm in a competition with that with my wife all the time. I am.
How
she doesn't know that she doesn't know that it's a competition, but I am trying harder to be more tired than you. What an asshole.
I am
such an asshole.
I'm more tired. How's your day? Because I'm tired.
I'm exhausted.
I'm so exhausted.
I just worked for so long.
I'm so tired. Well, talking about that, once again, self-analyzation, in the near tiny moments in which I was, seeing someone, I would work extremely hard on a day, even way unnecessarily, to the point where I'd be late for whatever plans I could potentially have, and work myself to the bone simply for the fact that when I got there, I could have an excuse to not be, like, vulnerable and present.
Totally.
That's fucking crazy.
Totally.
I mean, but, like, I used to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, we get those habits. And it is, at the root of it,
it's self-protection.
It is.
Yeah. We're trying to survive social shit.
Yeah.
And we're trying to survive shame.
Yeah.
I was saying before, it's what Tales of Mount Folly is all about. It's all about, like...
You're doing such a service with that.
It's
really
all about us
so
just
amazing.
Being, like, we don't get to be the hero, we don't get to be the victim, we just get to be the... fucking moron.
Yeah.
For a moment. And it's always most effective, I find, when it's like, if you just say what happened without whatever filter we feed the events of our life through to combat shame or embarrassment or being misunderstood.
Yeah.
Like, the moment we do that, I had dinner with a friend last night, and he was like, he had gone through a bad breakup, and he, like, referred to himself as petty. He was like, am I that petty? Yeah. And I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because we never call ourselves that. Because nobody wants to be petty.
No.
So when we talk about shit like that, we filter out pettiness.
Yeah.
And then we justify it.
Yeah.
But how much better is it to be like, how cathartic is it in a moment and afterwards to be able to be that open and be like, yeah, I'm fucking petty.
Yeah.
And I'm shallow. And I'm, you know, whatever.
I'm petty, I'm shallow, but like, yeah, I love being able to call that shit out, which is also like huge, because it's fun to be able to like, I'm petty, I'm shallow, and then you can laugh it off, and then like, it doesn't necessarily take the full teeth away, but I love having friends.
I like that term. You've used that a couple of times. What? Take the teeth away.
Take the teeth away. I like that. I love disarming a problem that initially kills you. Yeah. One of my favorite lines in movies ever, because it's so fucking relatable and yet such a new idea to say so simply, and it's in Drinking Buddies, when Olivia Wilde's character says, like, in a breakup, she's like, breakup is a fucking weird thing to do because it's literally the end of the world for you, and it's so cliche for everyone else.
So true.
Like, oh my god, it's like, yeah, like it's everyone goes through it, anyone can relate to you, yet you're looking around like, I don't know how to breathe right now. Like, you
know? A character in that movie, that was like,
yeah,
50 women that I knew back in Chicago, yeah, where I was like, oh, she was so, that character is so, I love Swanberg.
Oh, he's
and
amazing.
That character is so, yeah, perfectly dimensional, because that's the, yeah, kind of character you're talking about,
yeah,
where,
yeah,
it's like warts and all, man.
Yep.
Because she's rad and she's awesome and she needs stuff and she wants stuff,
mm-hmm,
and she like wants her life to be good, but also there are times when she's just a fucking asshole.
Yep.
And we all have times where we're just a,
dude,
fucking asshole.
The fucking the table read. Remember, it's like, this is also knowing and having empathy of like, maybe I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about and like wrong, but everyone in the room, like I did it, say anyone listening, I did a table read of the zombie, like probably like the 30 fucking fourth one I've ever done, but
yeah,
like we were all around and there's this pivotal scene where like this huge moment where this guy just, they get in an argument, this guy just pretty much takes down her in a strategic move of every part of her character. And then the next,
baller move,
yeah,
I would say.
It is just, they both do it, and he just like has been waiting to do this. And like the next scene I wrote is like her, he makes a small gesture, and then she goes, oh, well, he's trying, and then they talk about it, and it's all fine, all good. And everyone in the room was like, I don't know how to say this. That's not how relationships work. And here I am, like, no, but that's
but
not true.
There is something about
and,
that.
Of course, but like over the course of like learning about how everyone on this shit, I was like, oh wow, I was really wrong. Because when I finally got over ego, which Brian is, I talked to Brian about it, because Brian is a master at ego and like getting out.
We also
himself, but I was like, oh my god. Like I put it in the script just to try it, and I was like, oh, this is perfect now.
I love it.
It's perfect.
I love that shit, and I love that Billy Small quote. Hashtag Billy Small, the one that you said about that thing that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal.
It's fucking unreal, man.
Dude, this is perfect.
Yeah.
This is the exact kind of shit that I want to talk about,
yeah,
on
no,
this podcast.
The greatest. Nailed it.
All right.
I know. To the four listeners. How many,
yeah,
do you have?
I don't know.
Oh, there's no statistics for that?
We don't have enough subscriptions to...
Well, that's going to change.
It better.
Or blow this shit up.
This podcast is produced and hosted by me, Joe Tower, and executive produced and edited by Brian Weiss. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and rate us below. If you hated what you heard, let us know what we can do better. And also, go fuck yourself. For all other info, please visit www.talesofourfolly.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.